All right, I think we're live here. Notes from the Underground, episode 3. If you're just joining us, we are just live. Welcome to all. And today, we'll wait a few minutes here to let everyone in. If anyone wants to introduce themselves in the comment box, you can do that. We're not doing Facebook. Facebook's a little bit more unstable, I find, than YouTube. So we're just YouTubing it for now, for today. The topic of today's Notes from the Underground is simple. It's simply a kind of news roundup and a call to wisdom, especially the particular wisdom we find in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 17. Let me read that for you. The one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. And perhaps you're familiar with that proverb, perhaps you're not, and perhaps you're confused as to what that has to do with anything. And I hope it'll make more sense in a moment as we continue here. I thought about live streaming yesterday, Wednesday, but given that it was April Fool's, I thought I better not, because people are going to think Sam Perez is just making stuff up and proliferating various quantities of misinformation on top of all the misinformation we already have in our connected television era, as Neil Postman would have it. But I thought I better do a Notes from the Underground at some point soon here, because it's important to realize that although we don't know a lot of things and we are in a fog of sorts regarding certain specifics when it comes to this pandemic, this novel COVID-19 coronavirus, there are certain things that are still clear to us. There are certain things that do not change. And there are certain things that we need to be aware of. There's a lot in this society that tends to be consumed with one singular issue. And as Christians, we don't realize that there's a lot of activity in the background, as it were. There are many windows open on this computer, all right? And so we get consumed, and I think rightly so, with a lot of aspects, a lot of the aspects of this COVID-19. But we don't realize that there are even now certain things happening that may turn out to be nothing, may turn out to be something. Already we've seen calls for a nationalized health care system, which is to say that the government will assume even more messianic attributes, and it will attempt to be an even more enslaving deity. And in case you don't see this to be the case, think of where everyone is looking to at a time like this, in a crisis like this. Not to God, much less to private industry. We mock private industry when they come up in the press conferences. We look to the government. And why is the government not doing more? And why is the government not helping us and solving these issues and dealing with these matters, right? We look to our government, not in a legitimate way, but rather as slaves to a tyrant, because we are a nation of slaves. So, without being too long-winded, let me read some of these. I have my handy printout here of things that are too unbelievable to believe. I cannot believe these news stories. And if you'd like, you can text me your own, email me, you know where to find me, or you can post some in the comment section over on the side of the YouTube channel here. The Washington Post a couple of days ago ran an op-ed. Homeschooling during the coronavirus will set back a generation of children. Homeschooling during the coronavirus will set back a generation of children. Now, what do you hear when you hear that? What I hear when I read a headline like that is they misspelled public schools. This is not to say that homeschooling is for everyone or that every mother or father who's engaged in homeschooling is competent, but rather that there is an obfuscation here. There is a cloaking of facts and reality, which is that public school has retarded children. Public school has unsocialized children. It has not socialized them. It has not prepared them for God's world. It has prepared them for a fictional world of slaves. And so we have this op-ed from the Washington Post about homeschooling. As many of you know, many parents are now having to deal with their children. The very thing they've escaped, the very monsters that they have nurtured over the years that they just hand over to the government so the government can incarcerate them for 8, 9, 10 hours a day for 5 days a week and feed them propaganda, true indoctrination in statism. Now these same parents have them at home, and they're going bonkers. They don't know what to do. But God says that parents are, by virtue of being parents, and this is specifically the case, especially the case with covenant children, because you are the parent, you are equipped to educate your child, to prepare your child to love the Lord and to fear God. And yet we're being told by the good and the great of society that homeschooling is a danger. Homeschooling is a danger. It will set back a generation of children. Again, this is not April Fool's. This is April 2nd, all right? So I am not making these up. The New York Times ran a op-ed the other day as well that said... Well, let me just pull it up here for a sec off of someone's Twitter that I discovered it from. Essentially, that we are to blame a certain population, a certain group of people because of all the things that are happening here. Notice this little headline from the New York Times. By Catherine Stewart. Ms. Stewart is the author of The Power Worshippers, Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism. This was an op-ed that was run March 27, 2020. The road to coronavirus hell was paved by evangelicals. The road to coronavirus hell was paved by evangelicals. Under that, the byline says, Trump's response to the pandemic has been haunted by the science denialism of his ultra-conservative religious allies. And of course, who do we have here? We have on the picture that goes along with the headline in the electronic version, Paula White, one of the singers, it looks like, from DC Talk. And a couple of other characters I don't recognize. And so we're being told that evangelicals are to blame for this. Now, does this sound like anything in history? Does this sound eerily familiar? Yes. This sounds like many an episode in church history where Christians were scapegoated for what happened in the world. All right. And two examples are readily at hand. Nero, the lunatic emperor of Rome, set fire to his own capital city, and about two-thirds of the city burned. And he subsequent to the start of the fire blamed the Christians. And that set off a wave of persecution against the Christians in that empire. Near the end of the Roman Empire, in the early 400s, there were a number of waves of barbarian attacks upon Rome, the empire, and also the capital city. And this is another example of the scapegoating that the church has endured in its long trajectory, in its long history. And the pagans at the time, the Roman counselors and pagans and the noblemen, had an excuse, had a reason for why this was happening. And it was because the Christians had not paid due homage to the guardian gods of Rome. And so who was to blame for all of this tragedy that Rome was now facing? The Christians were. The Christians. And of course, this is one of the reasons why Augustine writes his massive tome, his a very well-known work, and very little read work, City of God. City of God is an apology for the Christian religion and for the works of God in human history. So we should not be surprised that in coming days, Christians are going, perhaps, to be accused of contributing or even creating the situation by which this pandemic developed. All right, maybe we weren't in the lab in Wuhan where the intermediate horseshoe bat was dissected and the coronavirus became attached to patient zero. Maybe Christians weren't there, but Christians were almost at the very start of it all, found and weighed and found guilty of contributing to this pandemic. Here's another one, another headline. This is No April Fools headline. Mayor Bill de Blasio. He's a lifelong New Yorker. It pains me to see this man in office. But here's what Mayor Bill de Blasio said. And he had a few choice words for those who would want to meet in public to worship God and to hold worship services. I'm going to play this clip from Mayor Bill de Blasio, and maybe you'll hear it, maybe you can't hear it through the live stream. I'm actually going to put all of these links in the comments below, so check them out a few minutes after the live stream ends here. But here's Mayor Bill de Blasio.
Everyone has been instructed that if they see worship services going on, they will go to the officials of that congregation. They'll inform them they need to stop the services and disperse. If that does not happen, they will take additional action up to the point of fines and potentially closing the building permanently. Everyone has been instructed that if they see...
All right, and there it loops again back to the beginning. So, you may not worship God at all because we said so. Now, here's a mayor. The irony hopefully is not lost on anyone who's been following the scoreboard here the last few days. Here in Jersey, it's been 12 days or so. Saturday, March 20th, we were told by the governor of New Jersey that we were not to hold any kind of meetings. Now, we don't know if that has the force of law, or is that an executive order. What is an executive order these days? But be that as it may, that was the executive order that was signed into the law by the governor. As recently as the start of May, one prominent health official in the city of New York, plus the mayor himself, encouraged New Yorkers to think nothing of this coronavirus, to go about their business, and to live life as New Yorkers, and don't let this little pandemic elsewhere stop you from going to the movie theaters, from going to see Broadway plays, and so on and so forth. And now, because we had no response, because the city had no response to this, and I'm speculating, I am pontificating here, now they're going to bring down the hammer hard and overcompensate in their response to this crisis, this health crisis, and effectively encourage Christians who are gathering for worship to be outed. To be outed. And for everyone to be on the lookout, to report on their neighbor. And there are a number of historical parallels that can be brought up to this, namely Germany, circa late 1930s, early 40s, and the Soviet Union post 1917. All right, not a good look. Not a good look. But like I said, we need to keep an eye on certain developments that are happening here. All right, I'm just marking off on my paper here, my handy printout, what I've covered and not. How about this one? Number four, if we're taking note here. Selective service is now being opened up for women. In a report, I believe, issued March 20th, if I have that date correct, a military commission gave the president its final report recommending that a selective service be opened to include women. In one of the executive summaries, we were told this: in reviewing the question of whether selective service registration should include women, the commission seriously considered a wide range of deeply felt moral and legal and practical arguments and explored empirical evidence. The commission, skipping a few things, the commission concluded that the time is right to extend selective service system registration to include men and women between the ages of 18 and 26. This is a necessary and fair step, making it possible to draw on the talent of a unified nation in a time of national emergency. So while you're sleeping and eating your Cheetos and worrying about COVID-19, notice everything that's happening in the background. All right, our military is being recommended to be opened up to include women. Militaries that include women are weaker, or more prone to a number of pathologies and other hardships. All right. It's a signal, it's a sign of our cowardness and of our slavery in this nation that we would expose the women of this nation, wives and daughters, to the front lines, to enemy combatants, and to full-fledged military combat. This is happening now, right? It's not that it's going to happen, it's that it's being recommended, all right? It's on low simmer, as it were. While everything else is being closed down, guess what's still open? Abortuaries, so-called abortion clinics, are still open. They're deemed essential service, an essential business. Liquor stores are still being kept open. Pot dispensaries are being kept open. And then we're told that Pornhub, one of the biggest pornography sites on the web, is giving its services free of charge to anyone. All right. So while the corporate worship of God is deemed non-essential by the government, what is deemed essential for your life? Pot, porn, abortuaries, these are open and ready for the engagement of willing citizens. But worship, worship in a corporate setting, worship of the one true living God, that's unessential. And so, in the midst of this crisis, because it's a crisis, because people are dying, because you know people, I know people who have died from this, a dear friend of our family, by the name of Frankie, 91 years old, passed away, and 25 years ago to 20 years ago, I learned more about vigilance and prayer and evangelism from Frankie than I have from many others. He was a stalwart saint, a Christian man, a pillar in his church, and he recently passed away from coronavirus, and his wife passed away a few days later. And it is hard. It's heartbreaking. And yet, here's something we need to realize, that amidst all the sadness and sorrow, even though we don't grieve like those who don't have hope, and yet we still mourn and grieve, the wicked plan. And the wicked cannot go to sleep until they enact mischief and evil and wicked and transgress God's law. Alright? And we're told that in the book of Psalms, in Psalm chapter 7, verse 14, behold, the wicked man conceives evil and is pregnant with mischief and gives birth to lies. All right, he makes a pit, digging it out, and falls into the hole that he has made. And we can look at Psalm 10, we could look at Psalm 36, we could basically look at the first book of the Psalter to see that this is the case. All right, Psalm 36, verse 3 and 4, the words of his mouth are trouble and deceit. He has ceased to act wisely and do good. He plots trouble while on his bed. He sets himself in a way that is not good. He does not reject evil. He loves evil. He lives off evil. And in a time when tragedy happens, when people have pivoted to sin their whole lives, when their solution to their problems has always been statism, when they have no recourse to the one true living God, what are they going to do in the moment of crisis? They're going to continue looking to the gods that they've trusted in, statism, and their own sin and wickedness. So, although many things are changing and many things have changed, does it surprise us that these things are happening? All right, it shouldn't. It shouldn't. Couple of other news stories, and then I want to wrap up. This is we're looking at the world of man here, all right? We're looking at the confusion of man. So you might end up feeling a little confused because after watching this live stream, because this is the world of man. This is the flux and the vicissitudes of the fallen world. Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York says this about his brother who has contracted and tested positive for COVID-19 a couple of days ago. He says, there is no superhero who is immune to this disease, he said in a press conference. Anyone can get it. No one can be protected from it. I couldn't protect my own brother. And with all he knows and as smart as he is, he couldn't protect himself. And that's certainly unfortunate that Mr. Chris Cuomo has this, and we, as many of you are doing, we're praying that God would heal all those who are sick from this, and that God would rid this world of this virus, and that God would give wisdom to our governing officials onto that end. But notice what he says: I couldn't protect my own brother. And the what's connoted from his statement, if not denoted, is that this thing is out there, and you can get it, and I can get it, and you are powerless before it. Is he also saying that we should listen to him, because he knows how to handle this, because the government knows how to handle this? I don't know. But we are all powerless before it. We are all powerless before it. Superheroes can get it. Superheroes can die from this. Smart people can die from this. Rich, strong, healthy people can die from this, and so on and so forth. So, does this sound like anything to you? Of course it does. It does to me. It sounds like death. It sounds like death, the great enemy that is the equalizer of us all. The enemy that has been with us, the human race, since the very beginning of time. And so again, although many things change, many things have remained the same. Who dies? Everyone in human history has died. Everyone. The rich, the strong, the poor, the weak, superheroes, anti-heroes, protagonists and antagonists. Everyone is prone to this because everyone lies under the curse of sin and of death. So, one last news headline here as we're rounding up this notes from the underground. A couple of days ago, I believe it's Hillsborough County in Florida, where Tampa Bay is found, issued an arrest warrant for the pastor of a church, and the pastor's name is Rodney Howard Brown. Now, some of you might know that name from the old Holy Laughter days. There was a point in my life when I was a Pentecostal, and so his name was familiar vaguely to me even then. Rodney Howard Brown was arrested because in his church, although his church had taken precautions to install a $100,000 antimicrobial air purifying system and to have parishioners 6 feet from one another, and in their fellowship time, they instituted a number of social distancing precautionary measures, they still went ahead and had worship, corporate worship services. And this was, of course, against the law, supposedly, against something in that municipality. And he was arrested. And Liberty Council is a nonprofit organization that advocates for religious liberty and a few other things, and they have taken up his legal defense. And they posted on their website a press release regarding some of the details, without saying too much of what had happened. And I'll post those links again in the comment section below. What I find interesting here is that good men, good reformed conservative men, have been of two opinions about not Rodney Howard Brown, the pastor, specifically, but on what his arrest represents. The bigger picture, whether or not the church should meet for corporate worship. And here is where Proverbs 18:17 comes back. Good men, good reformed men, on the one hand, have said, we need Romans 13. The government and governing authorities have spoken, our civil magistrate has spoken, we need to follow their edicts, their executive orders, their proclamations. The president, the CDC, governors, mayors, etc., etc., county officials. And it is unlawful for Christians to meet for worship. And it is an act of the greatest kind of lovelessness to meet for worship. And those who meet for worship are sacramentalists because they hold high the Eucharist, they hold high the Lord's Supper that in many Reformed churches is celebrated weekly. And don't you know, they have outed themselves. Now, I'm not talking about the First Things crowd with Rusty Reno and, Matthew Schmitz and some of these guys who I respect. They're some of my favorite Catholics to read. I think Reformed Christians should be aware of what Catholics are thinking. But, you know, First Things is a little weird because they're Protestantized. A lot of these guys are former Protestants, you know, Ross Douthat and all these guys. So they're not really representative of Catholicism. But be that as it may, I'm not talking about that kind of impetus, although I respect Rusty Reno for his sentiments. But I'm talking about these Reformed brothers. I'm not going to mention their names, all right, on either side. And then on the other side, we have, again, good men of good faith, Christian men, who say those who are calling us loveless have outed themselves as crypto-statists, as lovers of Caesar, over against lovers, the lovers of God. And don't you know that the government has no business whatsoever dictating to the conscience of the church what they should and shouldn't do? Furthermore, it's a First Amendment right that the government is trampling upon. And back and forth, we have labels being thrown, the crypto status versus the sacramentalists. Sounds like a baseball team. Oh boy, I know we miss baseball. Could I just give you a word of wisdom, whoever you are? Christian blogger, Christian leader, whatever that means, public intellectual, whatever that means, pastor, elder, take a chill pill. Take a chill pill. Pump the brakes a little bit. We don't know how this movie is going to end. We don't know what the last few chapters of this novel COVID-19, are all about. Wait and see. And don't make pronouncements with great dogmatic fervor and fury that cast your fellow brothers in a less than charitable light. Those who want to meet for worship may be reckless. Perhaps they're not. Take a chill pill. The kind that the Bible calls us to. Love bears all things. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love believes all things. And there ought to be some charity extended amidst all of this. I have my own personal sympathies, but let's take a chill pill. And those on the other side who want to obey, who have suspended corporate worship in obedience to what they believe is the clear dictate of the federal, state, and local governments. They are not crypto-statists. They are not secular humanists. They haven't sold out. Maybe they have. Maybe. But maybe not. So take a chill pill and let love, the true love of Christ, bind your conscience to God and to your fellow neighbor. What is essential and what is not? I asked my family this question over dinner the other day. And it was simply put, is the worship of God corporately on the Lord's Day a more essential activity than all of the activities of a hospital in combating COVID-19 at this time? Well, think about that question. Is worship more essential than medical care? How do you answer that question? In a sense, you could say it is essential. It's more essential. All right? And I can understand how someone would say, actually, it's less essential if how we're defining essential here refers and corresponds to the temporal sphere of this life. Then yes, I could see it being more essential than worship. All right, what a hospital does right now and all these centers and the ER and ICU doctors and nurses and medical professionals and staff, all right, in combating this coronavirus. So I can see it both ways. But what I'm trying to tell you is, let's wait. All right. Besides that, we need to realize that in different states, there are different realities on the ground. How can we say that Rodney Howard Brown's church is a non-essential activity? Their worship services were non-essential, all right? Now, I am not a holy laughter guy. I don't defend Pentecostal theology. This is, in many ways, a civil matter, all right, that has religious aspects to it, all right? And it's also, at the same time, if you can accuse me of speaking out of both sides of my mouth, it's something that is deeply covenantal, that has some civil implications, all right? But how can we say it's non-essential when the governor himself, Governor DeSantis, in his recent stay-at-home order, said that religious worship of churches and of synagogues was essential a few days after Pastor Rodney Howard Brown was arrested? So we're in a real quandary here if we're trying to keep score amidst this fog, amidst this crisis that is not only taxing our healthcare system in some places, but it apparently is draining our ability to be charitable and to think clearly. All right? In Montana, you're going to have a different reality than in California. All right? In Kentucky, you might have a different reality than in New York. All right? And so, can it be that what is true on a political level with our federalism, right, where you have a central government that respects states and their right to govern, that also has a correspondence in the church? Churches in Florida are different from churches in New York, in New Jersey, in California, in Montana, in Texas, in terms of combating this virus and in how they respond to the challenges before them on the ground in their respective contexts. So it's complicated. That's the bottom line. This is very complicated. And at the bottom of it all, I have to confess, it's a fog. Now, what I mean by, in order to wrap up a few loose threads here, what I mean by we need to watch how this thing plays out. Our government has shown itself to be incompetent on a federal, state, local level when it comes to matters of right and wrong. The fact that what is so plain to all of human history and to the church for thousands of years, the fact that that has been ignored by them only is further evidence of this. You take LGBT, so-called rights, gay mirage, you look at abortuaries and the so-called right to choice. And it's clear that our government must be respected, but we cannot trust it in many ways. Just like you wouldn't trust an alcoholic father who is abusive verbally and physically, but you respect him and you find ways in which you can honor him, so it is with our present governments. All right? And so we need to be skeptical in many ways about the word of man, whatever it is. We need to be absolutely confident with the word of God. All right? And for those of my brothers who hold to God's word, who do not favor worship gatherings at this time, you have some questions to ask yourself, as do those on the other side. When do you open up again? What's a good timetable for you? If you're going to say, when the government says, the government has shown a willingness to stay closed for months on end. We just heard from one of the doctors on the forefront of this response to this pandemic that social distancing will end when there are no more deaths. Well, no more deaths. That could mean 6 months. That could mean 12 months. That could mean 3 years. Is that cool with you? What timetable seems most palatable to you? All right. Now, for those who favor worship gatherings, but you're not meeting for worship, you got to ask yourself why. You favor it, why don't you meet? Why are you not gathering for worship right now? All right. What keeps you from that, which is your conviction? And we're going to find, I hope, that there are not easy answers to these questions. We need wisdom. We need to keep our eyes open and observe what's happening in front of us. That much we can and we must do. As we've just read, as I just read a couple of passages from the book of Psalms, the wicked are plotting while you're sleeping and eating and hugging your kids and spending time with them and working from home. The wicked are not asleep. They're plotting. This is what they do all day long. Perverse men and perverse women, evildoers, plot perversity. And they will not be content until they see their plans through. But you cannot lose sleep over that. Because although we're keeping our eyes open as a church on the statist tendencies of our government to arrogate for itself powers God hasn't given it, we have to keep our eyes on Christ, all right? And we have to say that above it all, Christ is in control. It's Christ who is the head of all creation, who is the head of His church, and who will come back to judge the living and the dead. And He is sovereign over all. And that is what I leave you with. Yes, this world is full of fog right now. And perhaps you are as well. Look to Christ. Trust the Lord. Keep your eyes open. Don't be a fool. Don't be naive. And don't label people who are unlike you, Christian men and women, who choose to respond differently, all right, in this time. Let us be bound by the law of love. Amen? May Christ be with you. And remember, Christ Jesus is Lord. Amen.